Mr. Richens, Reel 1. Can you tell me what position you held in the army when the Falklands crisis broke out in April 1982, please?
I was a company sergeant major of B Company of 2 Para.
And can you tell me where you were and what your reaction was when you heard the news of the crisis?
The location, I was on holiday in Cornwall with my family, and we heard news reports of a confrontation in the Falklands. I think at the back of my mind, as a professional soldier, that I was hoping that possibly the parachute regiment or two and more to 2 Para would be called forward for it. But on return back from holiday, there was a lot of news reports and whatever that were we going to go, weren't we going? I had a telephone come from my company commander, Major John Crossland, to come across for drinks with the CQMS, Steve Gerrard, where we were going to discuss our intended tour to Belize. But in fact, it was more of a briefing, the options of going to Belize or going to the Falklands.
What was the next thing that happened to you?
The next thing that happened to us, we were put on a standby for the Falklands, but it got a bit blasé at one time that all our equipment was packed, we had all our SOPs sorted out, and it was a case of saying farewell to my wife, saying that we're off, and in the evening I will be home. But actually, when we got the call to go, our farewells were, like I say, a little bit blasé, because thought we'd see each other in the evening, but in fact we were on the coaches and we were off, and we went down to Portsmouth, where we married up with the Norland, and off we went from there.
What in the way of equipment had you taken with you?
Well, full equipment for a long tour away. Not very much personal equipment. I think we took a suitcase, our wagon equipment, and our backpack Bergen.
What kind of reception did you get aboard Norland?
Very good. In fact, it was very weepy on a lot of people that we didn't expect. The dockers, who we all thought dockers were left-wing people, the amount of work that the dockyards worked on for the Norland, the preparation of putting helicopter decks, and the reception they gave us. And again, when we sailed, we had the regimental band playing various tunes. Some of the wives went, and we all stood on the ship as sailors do as they leave port. But I think one of the moving things, as we left Portsmouth Harbour, there's a little a little bit of shoreline, a promenade with a few pubs, and that was absolutely crowded with well-wishers, and that was quite moving. But then when we left the shore, and that was us en route, and we had a lot of things to think about of what we were going to do in the future.
What about the crew of the Norland? Did it cause a lot of inconvenience to them having the paras aboard?
Not a bit. I thought they thought we were wonderful. The naval crew, not working with the military before, I think there was a few learning curves for us and them. But I think the civilian staff of the Norland, including the captain, was fantastic. Ourselves, we had to turn a ship into a barracks. The bottom car decks, the quartermaster's department, different restaurants were turned into different messes, dining rooms, meal timings, and also allocate an accommodation to the different decks. A lot of the kit we were hoping to have didn't arrive, and I believe that as a ship left for the Falklands, be it naval or civilian, it was just cram-packed of what was on the dock at the time. So going on, when we met up with the rest of the fleet in the Ascension Islands, then a lot of cross-decking, cross-loading to get the right bit of equipment on the right ship.
How well prepared do you think your battalion was for the Falklands conflict, from the point of view of the training that you did aboard Norland?
Very good, but if I could just go back a few months before I answer that question, we had a very, very successful tour in the November in Kenya, which was a battalion exercise to get us in tune with what we would meet on a semi-operational tour in Belize. So we'd done a lot of live firing. We'd done a lot of hard, dry training with a test exercise at the end, which was very, very beneficial to the company and the battalion. The Norland, we're a bit restricted for space. We'd done a little bit of shooting, which was firing at gash bags in the sea. We did upset the Royal Navy party very, very badly. That we shot an albatross, which to all the mariners, that was, they were very displeased about it. The fitness training, we
had. Was that done by accident or deliberately?
I think it was deliberate. It was a target. And I think we were a bit fed up of shooting at gas bags, and this target moving left to right came into view, so it was a target that. Went.
Sorry, you were going on to say something else.
The fitness training side of it, we were a bit restricted on the running part, but we had two good helicopter decks where we could do circuit training type exercises, and we did run. It was running around the different decks, up ladders, down ladders to other decks. We started off in boots, but I think some of our naval friends and shift workers of the civilian members of the Norland was a certain amount of complaint of the noise, so I think we reverted into gym shoes after that, trainers. But on the medical side, we've done a lot of on the medical side. Now, our MO, the medical officer, he took a lot of thought through this, and for an example, he explained to us the Israeli-Egyptian war, where the Israelis carried their own insulin drip. Now, and that was the SOP, the Standing Orders for 2-Para, that every soldier, every member of 2-Para carried their own saline drip, and the. On the medical tuition on it, everybody could, by the time they got down there, could either do the drip in the arm or through the rectum.
What about your own responsibilities on the way down and the problems that you personally face?
Being a company sergeant major, I was still doing as I would in the barracks. So, like I said earlier, the Norland was a mini barracks as an order shop. Everybody had their own departments. We had our responsibilities at the RSM, the regimental sergeant major. We had our room inspections. We had our own discipline problems. My side, on the operational side of the ammunition, what ammunition scales we were going to carry, what weapon scales we were going to carry. We took a lot of thought on this, and we came up with the normal infantry section is one machine gun and rifleman. But we decided to split the section in half by having two machine guns in two groups. Instead of a fire group and a rifle group, we had more or less two fire groups with the option of with the rifle group within that, which worked out very well. And obtaining more machine guns wasn't a problem at all, which was very gratifying for us. That if we wanted extra equipment, we asked for it and we got it. So in fact, the system works when there is a confrontation, a war, or what have you, which is very encouraging for us.
What about the question of morale and confidence of the unit as you went down?
We had the education officer was tasked by the commanding officer, Colonel Jones, to be the newscaster, put out a newspaper, keep the people informed. So we had certain reports over the tannoy and notice board publications of what was happening, what the politicians were talking about. We had our own briefings and our own thoughts. But the morale of the soldiers was pretty high. They ate very well on the boat. In the evenings, they drank very well. They had quite a good social life. But I think, not to be too wary on this, I think Tupou was looking for a fight. It was a situation where there's a chance of a confrontation. Belize to us was a 6-month tour, but it wasn't for the options of going into the jungle or getting into a limited war, which if at that time the Falklands, it did, if we knew what we did know on it, it was going to be a limited war which we trained for. And I think the majority of people thought the idea of going to the Falklands is not that we wanted to save a little republic, one of our islands in the South Atlantic. It was just the business that some country was going to try to knock Great Britain off the pile. So it was going to go down there to sort the Argentinians out, not so much to go and save the Falkland Islanders.
What happened to you at Ascension?
At Ascension, we took stock of what we had on board. The commanding officer and the intelligence officer and the ops officer went down previous to us, so they were there waiting for us. They had all, we had a better update of what the situation was going to be. We cross-decked all the equipment. We spent a few hours getting used to the Royal Marines landing craft. And it was a more or less a trip round the bay. We didn't actually go ashore. I think we went ashore with the landing craft dropping their doors, and we got off and got back on again. And it was kind of a jolly round the very calm waters of the Ascension Island. And the situation with the Ascension Island, it's quite a pretty place.
On the way into the South Atlantic, were there any scares with submarines or interception by the enemy?
We had a lot of drills, and we did get it down to a fine art. Personally, I had two very frightening experiences in the whole campaign of the Falklands. One was going south, when we were just going into around the Roaring Forty area, and we had the bell rang, this is not a drill. It was a suspected submarine which was picked up on radar, which, being a soldier, when you're on dry land, you can do something about it. But being in a boat in a very rough sea, you felt I felt quite frightened. And we all done the right drills. It worked. We all went to our different stations, lifeboat stations. We all donned our life jackets. But the great relief to everybody, it wasn't a submarine, it was a whale.
Now, can we go through all the procedure for the preparation for the landings next, please?
Yes. The preparation for the landings, there was radio silence on on all communications. One of the problems we had that all our equipment in Bergen's personal equipment, which we wore, was kept in our rooms. Now, if anybody listening to this tape has gone across or on a ferry of any shape or size, it's narrow corridors and very steep sloping stairs. Now, one of the biggest rehearsals we had was getting troops down with fully laden backpacks, Bergens, webbing equipment, rifles, machine guns, and the heavier weapons down and through these corridors and very steep stairs. And on the beach landing, with the Royal Marines, they've got boats which are specially equipped that the landing craft can drive into the back of the boat. They can get in on relatively calm water, and off they go, and they can do their beach assault, beach landing, whatever. But with the good old Norland, and we love her very dearly, they had a cargo door which measured about 10 foot by 10 foot. Now, we had to get a battalion out of that door into landing craft on a very heavy sea. We couldn't do a lot of training for that. It was a one-off thing, hoping that the water and the sea wasn't very choppy in San Carlos water where we disembarked into the landing craft.
And the actual procedure for the landings, can you describe that as you experienced it yourself?
We had a church service. In fact, if I go back, it was quite amusing. The day of the landings, we were all woke up by the a recording of the Ride of the Valkyries, which is our regimental march, which stirred the battalion, gave it a bit of a buzz. We didn't actually know the day we were going ashore, but on that day, with that as a reveille, we then held a church service, which the soldiers enjoyed. We all enjoyed the church services. With our padre, David Cooper, who was quite a character, out of his dog collar, also whilst wearing his dog collar. We had a briefing farewell from the commanding officer, Colonel Jones. We went to our different stations to get our equipment. We cammed up. And then we started what we call the battalion snake of the getting down into the areas. Now, on the briefing, it was going to be possibly an hour or so to get the battalion off the boat, into our landing crafts, and away to do hopefully our unopposed beach landing. But the sea was very, very rough. And if you can imagine, a very high sea, and we had to judge when the boat came up on a wave, we had to jump down into the boat. So as we jumped down, we went down with the wave. Now that took something like 5.5 hours, maybe 5 hours, which was not what we thought. And when we got into our landing craft, B Company, we were the second company to go into the boats. We had something like a 2.5 hour, 3 hour wait in the water until the whole battalion was clear of the Norland. We had one accident where one of the soldiers jumped down with a SMG, a submachine gun, and it hit some metalwork and it cocked itself and went off and shot him in the thigh. When the whole battalion was off, the commanding officer, his boat landing craft was going to be the first ashore, but had a mechanical problem which displeased him no end. There was a lot of ranting and raving and shouting over this, but we went, and B Company was the first, my company was the first landing craft ashore. But when I say shore, that's a bit of an overstatement on the Royal Marines' part. They dropped us about 150 yards short of the beach. Now, I'm 6 foot, and when I went ashore, or stepped off of the boat, I went up to my chest. Now, my company radio operator, who was with me, he was about 5 foot 6, and it was a case of grabbing him by his backpack and keeping him out of the water as best I could. But a funny thing, when we actually, the doors went down, the word of command was out troops, which everybody looked around and wouldn't really understand what he meant. In the parachute regiment, there's only one way of saying is go. So with the procedures we do when we exit ourselves out of airplanes, so it was, I had to shout go, and everybody understood that, and off they went. Luckily, we hit an unopposed beach landing. Myself and the company commander, we went forward. We saw a light. Rather amusing story on this. The SBS came up and said, "Who are you?" And my company commander said, "Well, who are you?" They said, "The SBS. You shouldn't. You know, we're not expecting you to tomorrow." But my company commander again said, "Well, I'm sorry about that. So we're here and we're staying." Then we got ourselves shaken out. We sorted ourselves out. We had quite a long approach march up to top of Wessex Mountain, where we went firm, and dug holes, built sangars. That sangars is where you can't dig down, you dig up using rock stones as your protection.
Had you expected an unopposed landing?
Well, we knew that the SAS were going to do a few raids, and actually they knew how many enemy were on and around that area. But I do believe the Argentinians really thought that we were going to do a beach landing at Port Stanley. So I think as we hit the beach, I thought that either they're going to wait to see the white of our eyes, or by then it was going to be an unopposed beach landing. But we didn't have any briefings to the fact that there are trenches, there are known enemy dug in and around San Carlos water.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you talking about building the sangars.
Yes, we went firm. B Company were quite lucky. A lot of the Falkland is a peaty type water sodden place. Now, we're on a high feature, so when we dug our trenches and we built our sangars, we were relatively comfortable. But the likes of poor D Company, which were down in a kind of a saddle, as they dug their slit trenches, they filled up as with water.
How comfortable or uncomfortable were you on Sussex Mountain?
It was cold, we got very wet, and I think for the first 10 days we didn't really dry out from the landing. Feet was a big problem. I lost, when we went ashore, my total company strength of battalion personnel, not including detached arms, was 94. And in between the time we were on Sussex Mountain and the time that we done our approach march to Grease Green, I lost 14 members of the company through immersion foot, trench foot, or whatever you want to call it. The procedure was that you had two pairs of socks, one pair of socks would be on and the other pair of socks would be under your armpits drying off in the day. So at night you changed, but with the at that time, the boot that the army issued us was very inadequate for that type of terrain. The uppers just let water in, and that was our biggest problem. We did experiment on the way down with some ski boots from the Marines, but being a ski boot, there was no flexibility in the sole. We wore them for 2 days, and I think half the battalion went down with bad feet, blisters and whatever. It was just not feasible for us to continue with those.
What about enemy attacks whilst you were on the mountain?
We didn't see any enemy attacks until, I believe it was the day after the landing, and when the Argentinian aircraft started to come into play. Now, we thought at first that the Argentinian Air Force were mad to take such chances. But as time went on, we changed our views drastically. They were very professional in their flying and the way they conducted the business. If their navy and army was as professional as their air force, I think things would be a lot different in the Falklands.
Any incidents that happened on Sussex Mountain that you can recount?
In the evening of the first night, HMS Ardent Antelope was bombed in San Carlos Water, which really brought home to us that things could get very nasty down here. And I think, again, we have a lot of feeling for Navy personnel in the Army, because like I said earlier, when you're fighting a land war, there's places to go, but when you're confined into a ship, it must be a very horrific situation when you get hit. The ammunition exploding, fireballs going around corridors and things, it must be absolutely horrific. And I think that really brought home to everybody. We do have a very sick sense of humour in the Army, and also within the regiment. We usually we can make fun of the problems we have, the injuries we have, but I think to see a ship go down, and we knew people were on the ship, it was quite a harrowing experience for everybody. We did have a little bit of a scare by our own artillery. Now, I'm not an artillery man, but I believe that you've got to keep a round in the breech. Now, I don't know what happened, but a round was discharged accidentally, and it came very close to our company and exploded on an airburst. Now, we were very, very lucky on that nobody got injured, but again, it was a little bit of a problem we could have had, or we could have done without, if it could have caused quite a few fatalities on that one.
How was morale with all this hanging about on the mountain?
The morale of the company did dip slightly, because we've been all that way. We